Hello and welcome to episode 19 of the Heritage Connection, brought to you by the folks here at the Tower Heritage Center, home of the Washington County Historical Society in Washington County, Wisconsin. Our mission is to forge meaningful connections across generations to Washington County's hardworking legacy, and this podcast is one more way we're trying to make those connections. I'm your host, Justin Agar Pratt, and I'm joined by my co-host, Bella Bussey. Bella, how are you?
I'm fantastic.
Good.
I got to see the sunrise today. That was pretty cool.
Yeah. Pulling back the curtain a little bit. Normally, Bella and I record more in the afternoon, but just because of our schedules for this one, we're here early in the morning, so mm-hmm. It's a little bit different. But it's nice to start the day with this conversation. Mm-hmm, so I'm glad that you're back. Two episodes ago, my This Week in Washington County History entry was the anniversary of the Spirit of the American Doughboy statue at what is now known as the Washington County Veterans Plaza, which is located right outside the 1889 Courthouse Museum. And I should point out that that little patch of land is still owned and maintained by the county. The Historical Society, you know, now owns the entire block that the buildings are on, except for that little patch of land. So it's not technically our memorial. It's not our statue, but we're neighbors, mm-hmm. I guess you can say.
So this week, Justin and I will tell you about the artist behind that statue.
Now, plans for a Washington County Soldiers Memorial were first announced on November 11th, 1925, in the West Bend Pilot. In 1926, it was announced that the selected design was by Gale and Sons of Hartford and would be ready by May 1927. And their statue was $4,000 and would have names of Washington County soldiers from all the previous wars in bronze plates, which is a they estimated about 1,300 men. Now, I should say all of the wars that Washington County was a county, so did not include, you know, the French and Indian War, the American Revolution, War of 1812. Would have mm-hmm. started with the Civil War. Mm-hmm. The local American Legion posts were assigned to create and edit the list of names. In April of 1927, it was decided to place the memorial on the northeast corner of the courthouse square. But before this plan was carried out, the county agreed to purchase the ready-made Spirit of the American Doughboy by E. M. Vicaney. It was more economical, considering the statue was $1,000 versus the original $4,000. So, Bella, what do you think about that? Trading, buying, you know, the opportunity to buy local for, you know, the opportunity to go cheaper.
Yeah. I was surprised that that kind of choice was made back then. I guess I assume that people just bought local no matter what, because that was what was most readily available. It's not like you could, you know, order something on Amazon and have it delivered 2 days later.
Right. So. Yeah. I mean, they did, you know, for depending on what it was, you know, building materials, products. I mean, they did have, you know, the catalog system, but mm-hmm. for something like a war memorial,
right?
You know, it's not like there was like War Memorials R Us magazine that they could order from. So that's, yeah, kind of interesting. Uh-huh. Well, so let's dive into the artist who I mentioned just a little bit ago. Ernest Moore, known as Dick Vicaney, lived from 1876 to 1946, and he was a native of Spencer, Indiana. He was the son and grandson of French immigrant sculptors. Now, as a teenager, Vicaney set up a portrait business in Spencer and worked in his father's monument shop, where he learned stone and marble work. And from 1905 to 1920, Vicaney worked in various monument shops in different states. He also worked on the monuments for Andersonville National Cemetery and at the site of the former Civil War prison camp in Andersonville.
Though known for the Spirit of the American Doughboy, Vicaney's bestseller was the Impoluck, a good luck piece patented in 1923. It's a leprechaun-like figure surrounded by horseshoes and four-leaf clovers, and it came in various forms, from keychain charms to statuettes, tie pins, incense burners, lamps, and even an expandable ring.
So it's really interesting that this, I mean, this Spirit of the American Doughboy, at least here in Washington County, is so iconic. And as we'll hear, it's also found elsewhere. Mm-hmm. But the where he actually made his money was this little Impoluck. And have you ever seen a picture of the Impala?
I have.
Yeah. What do you think of it?
It doesn't even really look like a leprechaun to me.
I mean, you look at this thing and it's like, and first off, I'm not a sculptor, so like I'm being an armchair critic here. Mm-hmm. But like this thing, it looks pretty chintzy. Uh-huh. And like it looks like it's from the 1920s, mm-hmm. early 1920s, right? Yeah. And just like a little knick-knack kind of thing. And it's, I mean, it sounds like it came in all sorts of forms. Mm-hmm. And we think about like merchandising now with film characters and all that. I mean, you can get, you know, oven mitts, bathroom rugs, toothbrushes, everything yeah. with your favorite character on it. It sounds like the Impaluck was kind of like that.
Yeah.
Put that thing on everything. And maybe that's why it was the bestseller, I mean, because it was just so prolific. Yeah. And this, I feel like, I don't know, as we talk a little bit more about Vicani, the Impaluck is sort of representative of his legacy just as much as the Doughboy statue.
Well, Vicani was a self-promoter. He had a huge ego, referring to himself in the third person in his own sales literature as, quote, a famous sculptor, end quote, and describing in flowery, patriotic prose the beauty, perfection, style, and grandeur of his own work. He relied heavily on glowing letters and testimonials from his customers. In August 1921, Vicani began marketing a cast lead miniature 11.5-inch Doughboy and a table lamp version. They were both used as prizes for fundraising drawings and given to the person performing the unveiling. Deceptive wording led buyers to believe that the statuettes were made of bronze, but none were. A descriptive printed card in the packaging described the piece as made of soft white metal, a lead alloy, which bruises easily. The miniature Doughboy suffered from a flaw. The rifle was cast separately and had to be glued into the left hand by the purchaser. Over the years, the left hand would fall out or the reinforced bayonet would break off. Complete Doughboy statuettes and lamps are very rare.
Vicani developed a program communities could follow to raise funds needed to purchase Doughboys, the full-size statues, not the little ones. He claimed that regardless of how small the organization or local community, the program had always succeeded where it had been followed. Brochures and advertisements contained coupons to be mailed to him with a small down payment. And the fundraising program details and supplies would be sent back. So, you know, it's kind of like that guaranteed for the life of the product, right? As long mm-hmm. as you follow this, it'll work. And if it didn't work, well, you just must not have followed the system.
Right.
Well, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about Washington County's fundraising efforts and the installation and the Doughboy statue itself. So we'll be right back. And we're back. So we were just talking about Vicani's, you know, self-promoting ways and how he had this whole system for fundraising that communities, if as he stated, if followed correctly, would never fail. So let's talk about this. In May 1927, the West Bend Pilot announced a penny drive. So school children were asked to send at least 2 cents, but not more than 10, right? So Vicani's already got this, like, formula, and I don't know what his math was. Each child received a button with a picture of the statue to be worn on Memorial Day. And each school that had all students donate received a certificate with each child's name deposited in the cornerstone time capsule with other important documents. People could also purchase a subscription at $2, $5, or $10, and then they would get those marketing materials back.
Sure. Much of spring and summer of 1927 were spent searching for names of veterans. The Civil War appeared to be the most difficult. In August 1927, it was announced that 2,554 names were to be stamped, 1,054 from the Civil War, 31 from the Spanish-American War, and 1,469 from World War I. The final count was twice the original estimate, and the project went over budget $900. On November 5th, the statue was placed on the granite base, and the name plaques were fastened. The statue was dedicated on November 13th, 1927.
So real quick, here are some fast facts about the Doughboy statue. So it stands 6 feet tall without that raised arm above the head. It's made of brass sheets that are pounded in and on molds and then fitted together. It is 0.045 of an inch. So what is that, 45 thousandths of an inch, which is, that's like as thick as a penny. It's not that thick. The original cost was $6,067.62. Now, that includes like the concrete base, the plates to be stamped on, like everything for installation, the whole thing, which is $2,000 more than what they were going to pay Gale. Now, I don't know what it would have come out to with Gale, right, with all of those additions, but it's kind of interesting. It's brown in color. The tree stumps at the bottom represent the trench warfare of no man's land, and the barbed wire at the base is real. The doughboy is holding a 1903 Springfield rifle, and he wears a rectangular bedroll backpack with a bayonet on the side, a square gas mask pouch on his chest, a cartridge belt, a canteen, mess kit, and a first aid kit. And since he's striding rather than running or charging, his leading left leg is straight. And I think part of that was, I've read that they didn't, Vicani didn't want it to look like he was retreating, like if he was running, right? He didn't want it to be taken that way. So it's more of this stride. And if you look at the statue, the stride is very reminiscent of the Statue of Liberty. I don't know if that was just something that, I mean, that image is kind of like burned into our minds as Americans. And obviously the Statue of Liberty was a lot newer then. Hard to say. He never cited it as a direct inspiration, but when you look at them side by side from the profile, I mean, the stride is almost exactly the same.
Well, from what we've learned about Vicani, I can see how he might have drawn inspiration from other artists.
Yeah, and you know, he probably thought, well, she's wearing these long robes, so you can't really tell, no one's going to notice, but it's very reminiscent. And here's an interesting note. Over 10% of the United States World War I memorial statues are by E.M. Vicani. Now, if you want to know more about the Doughboy statue and the installation and information about that, there's a great blog post about it. And I will put a link to that article in the Tower Chronicle in the show notes. So you can click over and read that.
It is a good read. Following the death of his second wife, Betty, and shortly after his 70th birthday, Ernest Moore Vicani committed suicide on October 4th, 1946, at his home in Spencer, Indiana. He made funeral arrangements for himself, wrote his will, he had no children, and made arrangements with the paper to publish the biography he had written. Vicani's promotional activities and the fact that so many doughboys were made have been perceived negatively by some. The doughboy has been described as an unimportant off-the-shelf sculpture on at least one occasion, and its many replications were a factor in rejecting an application to have Fort Atkinson, Wisconsin's doughboy in the National Register of Historic Places. Those at Fort Smith and Helena, Arkansas, are in the National Register, though. On another occasion, his miniatures were described as bric-a-brac, and he was referred to as a crass entrepreneur.
Well, those are kind of rough reviews, and really a sad end to his life. Do you think Vicani, as this shameless self-promoter and the creator of the Impaluk and all these little knickknacks, for you, does that detract from the Doughboy statue itself? Like, do you think it's, you know, unimportant and off the shelf? And what do you think? What are your thoughts on that?
I think that I can separate the things that he might have did or said or how he was in his life from what the statue that I know today.
It's interesting that, I mean, you know, it talks about the fact that, well, because the Doughboy statue is not, I don't know, one of a kind or rare, that takes away from its importance. And I don't know, and maybe it's just because I'm not, like, experienced enough, but I didn't even know what a Doughboy statue was until I started working here. And I would imagine that a lot of people who have a Doughboy statue in their town, city, county, whatever, they might not know that there are other Doughboy statues elsewhere. And so the fact that it's not one of a kind, for me anyways, doesn't really detract from the meaningfulness. I mean, people gather around that thing every Memorial Day, every Veterans Day, and they might not know the story behind it or what it is, but it's this, like, symbol. It's a great, I mean, it's got some, the statue has some energy to it.
Yeah.
Because of the stride and, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think I would just say that before learning more about the Spirit of the American Doughboy sculpture the past few weeks, I haven't really paused to think about how we use art as a way of making an abstract concept or feeling or idea into something concrete and tangible so that a broader audience can understand a certain experience. When you talked about the Doughboy statue having a certain energy around it, that's what it made me think of, because we can sit here all day and critique an artist or any historical figure for that matter, what they did or what kind of person they were, but in all reality, the artist's choices or artistic choices that Vicani made shaped an aspect of how we view veterans and the experience of the ultimate sacrifice. That's a bit of a rant, but that's my hot take.
That's great. Yeah, well said. Yeah, thanks for sharing that. I think you make a good point. Lots of good points.
Yeah. Thanks.
All right. Well, an interesting guy, E.M. Vicani. I appreciate you helping me tell our audience about the artist behind the Doughboy statue. And again, if you want to learn more about the Doughboy, I'll post the link to that blog post in our show notes. And now it's time for This Week in Washington County History. So the West Bend Theater, a home for live performances and motion pictures, opened on November 26th, 1929, to a packed house of 800 theatergoers. The evening included the Hearst newsreel and Vitaphone comedy presentations, accompanied by the Barton organ and several musical numbers. Now, back then, an adult would pay 50 cents to see a show, and children would pay 25. In 1936, theater manager A.C. Burkholz installed one of the first air conditioning systems in West Bend. The theater was split into two in the 1970s and then made into three screens in 1992. By 2006, the theater had closed, but the building has since been repurchased and renovated, and it's now known as The Bend, and it's a venue that hosts live music, comedy, film screenings, and other special events. And we talked about The Bend in our first episode in the month of November with, you know, it, that marquee is behind that famous photo of JFK.
Mm-hmm.
And so almost 100 years old.
Crazy.
And, you know, I'm so glad that it's a vibrant, active place in the community now. Mm-hmm. It reopened not long after I started working here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great because anytime you go up in the tower and you look at downtown, when you go up in our tower of the 1889 courthouse, you look downtown and that marquee is just so striking and it stands out. Really great colors, I think.
Yeah. I've never been to a show there. I haven't been yet. So
I haven't either.
I'd like to go check it out.
I've only been in for, you know, like, you know, to see the place and for some one-off meetings during their like non-open hours, but I gotta get down there sometime.
Mm-hmm.
So we're lucky to have it for sure. So happy anniversary to The Bend, originally known as the West Bend Theater. Well, December is here as of the release of this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Are you, now I have to ask, are you a, do you have a hard and fast rule as far as when Christmas music can start for
you?
Yes. Yeah? What's
your
rule?
Absolutely. After Thanksgiving.
After Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't come up with this phrase, but I see Thanksgiving as the speed bump between Halloween and Christmas. So
it kind of is.
You know, I just I enjoy like autumn and fall and everything and Halloween and more like family friendly Halloween. I'm not into horror movies or anything like that. I'm like more of like a Great Pumpkin Charlie Brown.
Mm-hmm.
That's more my speed. But once we get past Halloween, I'm not like full blown into Christmas music, but whenever the mood strikes me, I'm like, okay, I'm just going to accept it.
Life
is
short.
Life can be difficult. So I'm just going to give myself Christmas whenever I want it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Totally.
Now, do you have like a specific, so like Thanksgiving's done. Do you have like a specific Christmas album you like to start with? Do you put on the radio? What's, do you have a process or is it just whatever happens to happen?
I don't have a process. I just, I guess, turn on like Christmas radio on Spotify and I just I just let it happen.
Just let it roll, huh?
Just let it go.
Yeah. Now, this is sort of a shameless plug because our next members-only Tower Talk, which is coming up on Tuesday, December 5th, is called The 12 Songs of Christmas. Mm. And I'm going to be diving into 12 different songs, both sacred and secular, talking about the meanings behind them. And there's some really surprising, histories and facts behind them. So if you're not a member yet, click on the become or tap on the become a member link in the show notes. These Tower Talks are free for members. They're member exclusive. They're Zoom presentations. They run about an hour long, and you don't have to register. You don't have to do anything. As long as you're a member, you'll get that Zoom link to your inbox, and you're going to be able to sit back and hear some samples of Christmas songs. Now that it's after Thanksgiving, Bella will be able to tune in if she wishes, and get your favorite Christmas drink, eggnog, hot chocolate. Do you have a Christmas drink every year that you like to enjoy?
Peppermint hot chocolate, definitely.
Okay.
Well, hot chocolate with like a candy cane in it.
Yeah. I look forward to the Sam Adams Holiday Sampler Pack. Mm. They have this beer in there called Old Fezziwig. It's my favorite Christmas beer. And they only sell it in the sampler pack. And it drives me nuts.
Huh.
And they actually pulled it from the sampler for a few years. And I don't follow them on social media. So I don't know if there was like an uproar. But I didn't buy the sampler pack that year. I was upset. Well, then they brought it back. But I'm kind of like, why don't you sell this in six packs? You know, they sell their winter lager, mm-hmm. which is, it's fine. I think they would sell a lot more Old Fezziwig if they sold it in its own six pack. But I'm sure there's some sort of like monetization marketing scheme behind that they wouldn't sell as many sampler packs. Case in point, mm-hmm. I didn't buy it because Old Fezziwig wasn't in it. So mm-hmm. there you go.
I've been having the same problem with beer though, where I have one that I really like from a brewery and they sell it for a while in a six pack. And then all of a sudden it's just out of grocery stores mm-hmm. and they just sell it in the sampler pack.
Yeah. Yeah. It kind of drives me nuts.
Yeah.
Well, oh well. What do you do?
It is what it is. Try something new, I guess.
That's right. Yeah. All right. Well, Bella, thanks for having this conversation with me.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. And thank you for tuning into this week's episode of The Heritage Connection, brought to you by the Tower Heritage Center, home of the Washington County Historical Society, whose mission is to forge meaningful connections across generations to Washington County's hardworking legacy. See you next time.